Welcome to Your Making It Worse. We're here, we're queer, who cares? I'm Elliot Glazer.
And I'm Brent Sullivan.
And I'm H. Allen Scott.
Textual healing.
This news is a few months old, and it kind of slipped under the radar at the time, but when it comes to the rightward push against trans rights, this one feels perhaps the most nefarious out of all the things we've discussed, initiatives against trans rights over the last couple years. And believe it or not, this comes from a conservative community in deeply blue California. A few months ago, a Superior Court judge blocked an order passed by the Chino Valley School District, which is like an hour and a half or so east of Los Angeles. And the order mandated that school officials must notify parents if their child seeks to change their pronouns in school or use a bathroom assigned to a different gender. The California Attorney General sued, and the order has been put on hold, so you don't have to lose sleep over it yet. But I just thought it was so personal. Yeah. Such a wild overreach for any politician to mandate that school officials are basically forcibly outing trans kids at school. I was gobsmacked by this. What did you guys think?
Well, I mean, first off, I just want to clarify that they don't see it as outing. They see it as protecting the children. So in terms of like the logic behind it, and I'm not saying there is much logic behind it because I don't agree with that logic at all, but their logic is that they are not protecting, or they're not like hurting the kids' sort of, you know, free speech or anything here, because they're protecting the kids against this thing, this evil thing. So it's like, again, the kids, you know, the kids are in danger cry. Like, that's really what it is.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an uneven playing field because it's like, it's just as I always say with this stuff, it's a bizarre overreach in that whether or not they're pretending that it's for the right reason or not, they're just, why? I always just say, why do you care? Like, what is the end game with this? Why do you care? Why are you looking to be able to out or tattle or report on like
belittle, demean? Yeah.
Yeah, it's gross. I
couldn't help but put myself in these shoes and think like, you know, remember when, you know, 20 years ago for me, 30, 40 years ago for you guys, when we were in grade school and like coming out. Obviously, it was like you came out to your friends first. Like,
yeah,
I think everyone, almost everyone does that, at least in my experience. The thought of like a friend telling a school official and then that person is now a mandated reporter that they would have to call your parents and say Brent is gay. I mean, imagine what that would have, like the chilling effect that would have had on coming out 20 years ago.
I mean, not even just telling your friends, like, you know, there are so many kids. I mean, I was one of those kids that I had great relationships with teachers where I was able to be myself and like be open about who I was and like everything with teachers at school. And, you know, the fact that a kid would have to go to school afraid to say something to a nurse or to a teacher that they like, but then that also puts, you know, queer staff into a weird position because in their, you know, in their world, that they should be a safe space for a lot of these kids. And then this makes them essentially legally forced to go against even who they are.
Yeah.
It feels very Floridian. I mean, it feels very Ron DeSantis. And I really can't believe it's in Chino Valley.
Chino Valley. But that's why you vote, and you got to vote local because local elections matter.
Very much so. Because we don't do this often, having repeat guests on this podcast. And we've been doing this for, I was shocked to learn today that your last time here was 4 years ago. So welcome back, Brian Safi.
Pre-pandemic.
Pre so many different things. I mean, Trump was president. There wasn't a pandemic. Oprah mm-hmm. had a different body. Mm-hmm. Sure. There were so many different.
Elliot was still unhinged, but yeah, that's right. A lot of things have changed. And
my name is Barbara Unreleased.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So welcome back, Brian.
I'm so happy to be here. I am so sad to tell you guys that nothing on my end has changed.
Well, that's not true. That's not true.
Stasis personified.
Well, that might be in your life, and we can talk about that with your therapist if you want. But you do have a new podcast since you were here, Attitudes, which is very exciting. Yes. So that's new.
It's basically what Throwing Shade was, but we changed the name. So it's not terribly inventive, but yes.
But still.
But still, that's a big deal.
Why did you change the name? What was that about?
Well, we just sort of felt like the name had sort of expired past its date. Like it was just a sort of a new era. And it was in that era also of just feeling like, you know, the name Throwing Shade really isn't ours to use any longer. We're a little smarter. We're a little brighter. Like, let's give that up and start afresh.
Nice. Yeah.
I was going to say, you definitely know that a phrase is like past its due when I start using it. And I just started using Throwing Shade. So there you go.
How do you,
well, there you go. Yes, how we're right on, throwing all right shade. On time. Yeah.
Brent, how
until
do you
next year, Brent's going to say, he's going to talk about serving cunt.
Oh, there that's it is. Right. Elliot
no.
is
no. But Brent, how do you use Throwing Shade? I want to know that actually.
I think I've used it like once with Elliot, and it was like in relation to someone younger making fun of me. I think that was the thing it was.
Okay,
that's fair.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
right?
Wait, Brian, so where did the name Attitude, like, why Attitude?
So there was a talk. There was a talk show in the like 90s. I didn't see it while it was on Lifetime, hosted by Deirdre Hall, who was like a soap star, and someone else. And they would do the smallest things, but they would act like they were the highest stakes. They were like, oh my God, and today I'm changing my nail color. And they would like scream. And the audience would just like watch them get manicures. It was so boring.
Wait, was this in the era of Intimate Portrait Lifetime?
Yes.
Okay. That's a good
era.
This
is also in the era of, I think, Alan, you might remember, there was a talk show that never took off that was like two ladies who were like best friends.
Oh,
and they were like,
the moms.
The moms.
There was also Queens. And,
yes. I don't know about Queens, but this was, and it became a sitcom too. The talk show, they also had an ABC, I think it was ABC sitcom.
Oh.
It was like a blonde woman and a brunette woman. They were like stand-up comics, moms, doing mom material. And they had a talk show too, in addition to the sitcom. Yes.
Love their talk show.
But what was the Queens one?
Queens was two women, the mom from My So-Called Life, and another, and someone else. And they shot in Queens, but double entendre because they were, you know, calling themselves Queens too, which, by the way,
of course,
could you ever imagine the mother from My So-Called Life calling herself a queen?
A queen?
No.
It defies logic.
By the way, I love how on this podcast we break down eras on Lifetime TV that we're able to really dive into broad strokes of Lifetime, the history of Lifetime. Yeah.
So we essentially stole the title from that talk show, and
it's very 90s talk show Attitude. It's very much in that's the right realm to choose from.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes, and so we felt sort of confident in that choice, and also confident that probably no one would pick up on the fact that, you know, it was stolen from a talk show that lasted 10 episodes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Safe to assume. Yeah.
Well, and you and Aaron, I mean, your co-host, Aaron Gibson, fantastic. You're both fantastic together. So funny. Like,
thank you.
What are some of the things that you're, I mean, because the whole thing is you kind of like just sort of bitch.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, so what are you bitching about these days?
Yeah. So well, at the beginning, I just went to visit my sister in Florida, and the thing that drove me crazy recently was there was a shirt that had like 10 rules for dating my daughter, and it was like, one, you look at her weird, I kick your ass. But the last one was, number 10, I do to you what you do to her.
Ooh.
Which to me was like a very closeted sort of, we were all leading to like, I want to fuck my daughter's boyfriend. You eat her out, I eat you out, you know, like that sort of thing. And so that is one thing. But then we also take issues that are affecting queer people and you know, we talk about issues of gender and just sort of treat them with very little respect in a way that, like, we make fun of the assholes who are causing these things. But also we just completely bitch about t-shirts we saw, to the pace of My Name is Barbara, to I know I keep talking about that, to anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, Alan, did you read My Name is... That's the book, right? Her autobiography?
Yeah. I'm reading it now. Yes, I'm reading it now.
I've been halfway through. The audiobook, which means I'm 26 hours in of a 48-hour.
Yes. No, I'm halfway through as well, but I'm actually reading the book because I'm like, it doesn't, for some reason, my like the, I got the Audible book too, but it doesn't sync up with my actual Kindle book, which really frustrates me. So I've just been reading the book.
Yeah, that's
We're
fair.
Talking about Barbara Bush right now. Is that it?
We are.
It's Barbara Bush.
We are. The daughter, Barbara, Laura's daughter, not the first lady, the daughter who wrote a 952 page memoir.
I cannot imagine. We've had a comedian on this podcast named Babs Gray, whose real name is Barbara. Sure. She goes by Babs. She's so funny.
So funny.
She's great.
I just can't imagine being going by Barbara, like, as somebody under 50, you know?
No, it's just,
I can't imagine like a little baby Barbara.
I can imagine a Barbara, but not a Barbara under 50.
Sure.
Uh-huh. Barbara.
Yeah.
Barbara.
Well, but I don't think anyone says Barbara. Right.
Oh, Barbara.
And yet we look at Hannah and we say Barbara. Why didn't we ever call it Hannah Barbara?
That's a very fair point.
It's like the Caribbean thing.
It's very true. Speaking of this, like, you, Brian, you and Alan are both reading Barbara Streisand's autobiography. Mm-hmm. I'm not. And Brent, it's certainly not even on his radar.
No.
Right.
I am very much like down the middle with Barbara. I've never been like super. Okay, so what compelled you to read the book? Because again, I have nothing but respect, but I've just never had an interest per se. And
I think it was the press tour that she did for this book, and the fact that it was almost 1,000 pages. Like, that is so wild to me. I mean, that's literally
so
longer
indulgent
than Ben-Hur, right? And the novel. And I don't know. I just couldn't believe what she was talking about. And the truth is, she's really not. I mean, when she's talking about the work, it's interesting. But when she's not, it's at its most interesting. Like, it's literally like sitting at the kitchen table with your grandmother. And she's like, I got this mustard dish at this place.
Right.
And the person was wearing this. And I was wearing
$4.12. And then, and they forgot to give me a receipt. So I went back and I said, can I please have a receipt? And they said, sure. But then,
for real. And then just the sort of the ego involved with it, where she's like, it turns out if you like, she talks about mustard dishes a lot, but she's like, if you like, which is literally a dish you serve mustard in. I've never heard of it. But she was like, if you're at a hotel and you like their mustard dish or something else that they're serving something on, all you have to say is, can I have it? And they say yes. And I'm like,
yeah, sure. No,
all you have to say.
All Barbara Streisand has to do is, that is, can I tell you? The only Barbara Streisand song I know is the duet she did with Vince Gill in like 2004.
Honestly, I was expecting 50 other names to roll out of your mouth.
I know. Yeah, I was expecting truly. Celine Dion. I was expecting Judy Garland. I was
expecting something.
Yes. And that's the whole song. And I honestly think I knew that she was big, but I don't think I knew she was as legendary.
Right.
And so I remember thinking I was like, oh yeah, she, you know, Barbara Streisand, she does duets with like country singers all the time.
That's incredible.
Anyway, but like, you were like neutral on her growing up. You weren't like particularly.
No, I had seen What's Up Doc, and I had seen, I think I had seen Funny Girl, but she wasn't, certainly I never idolized her or anything. But then I saw her giving, someone asked like what they should give their mother for a birthday present. And she said, get them one of those frozen yogurt machines. Like, she's so out of touch that like the idea that I would spend $48,000 and get my mom like a 16 handles, like, is so wild to me. And then the thing about her basement, that she has this basement that's a mall of all her old stuff. And I was sort of like, you know, I'm curious. I want to know how that person came from. And it turns out her story is interesting, but I will say this. I have not sought out her work anymore because of this book. Like, I haven't watched
I'll tell you the moment I became obsessed with Barbara Streisand, and it wasn't necessarily Funny Girl or any of the, like, the gay tropes. I mean, all this is pretty gay, the reason why I fell in love with her. But I was obsessed with, like, movies as a kid, and, like, I had a subscription to Premiere magazine, and I was obsessed with, like, every month getting Premiere and just, like, reading through Entertainment Weekly and all that shit.
Right.
And Premiere and Entertainment Weekly both had an ongoing feature from some snarky homosexual, I bet, talking about the drama on the set of The Mirror Has Two Faces. And it went on for like a year of like people just reporting on this drama and the extensions and all the problems and all the things. And so I became super excited to see this movie because I was like, oh my God, there's so much drama with it. Then it comes out and I'm like, this is delightful. This is enjoyable. This is a fantastic film. I fully relate to this character. What's wrong with people? And that's when I fell in love with Barbara Streisand.
Okay, but I will see it. That's the one with Lauren Bacall, right?
Oh my God. Yes, that is the one. Capital T-H-E one with Lauren Bacall. Yes,
yes, I remember she won like a lot of awards for it.
Is Barbara in it? Barbara plays the ugly duckling. She goes from ugly to pretty. She is the mirror that has two faces, Elliot.
Oh, is it like, it's like a makeover story?
Yes, there's a whole, there's one of my favorite, like, you know how the Muppets show the transfer of time by like moving objects and stuff? You know what I mean? Sure. Like they're traveling or whatever. She does exactly that in the film by just like, she's sitting at the gym doing the whole like leg crunch thing while eating a celery stick. And she's like at the salon getting her hair dyed and everything while eating a carrot. Like it all is implying that she's going through this like physical journey of beauty and physicality. And then at the end, when you have to understand the story, but whatever, Jeff Bridges comes back from a trip and they've been married, but like it's crazy. Okay. Anyway, she comes back and then there's this slow pan from her feet. From her feet up slowly up, and she has that black pencil skirt going on, and up her body till then she goes, well, where you been, or whatever she says. I forget what she says, but she's just like, it like slowly moves up to her face. It is such a good moment. Brian, you need to watch it so that you can text me as soon as you see that scene.
By the way, I love the way you put that together of like the slow pan up and then you didn't know the line.
I don't know the line. I don't know the line.
By the way, I loved it. But, so this is really a story about how beauty matters. Is that ultimately?
There is a really funny recurring line in the film where Jeff Bridges says to all of the women that like leave him, like, can I call you? And they all, like, from Elle McPherson to Mimi Rogers to Barbara Streisand. Mm-hmm. And they all respond when he says that question. They go, what for? But of course, Barbara can't do what for in a normal way. So she goes, what for?
Boy, all right.
It's just so good.
I will watch it. I mean, I'm a big fan.
I also want to know, Brian, you do another podcast, correct? Called Groceries?
Yeah.
Also with Aaron. Tell us a little bit about that, because I could talk about the grocery store literally all day.
Yeah, same.
Long.
Yeah, oh my God. So that's where it stemmed from. And we do like seasons each year. We have a new season coming out next year. We do like 10 at a time usually.
Uh-huh.
But it stemmed from like our love of the grocery stores, from like the carts to the specials. I've done all this research and I found out like you can go to Albertsons and say, you can go on their Facebook page and they have a word of the day. And the word of the day is always many words, but it's usually a product. So to be like, the word of the day is like coconut water. And you just take a can of coconut water to the front and you walk out with it. You don't even pay.
Wow. All right.
So we have all these tricks and hacks. And we talk about, also, I do like a homophobia rating depending on what kind of lube they sell there. And actually, I think it was a Safeway. Someone who listened was like on the board of Safeway and was like, guys, we need to get better lube in there instead of just like Astroglide trash. And they did. So And then, of course, we talk a lot about grocery store fashion, because for me, that's sort of an extension of your own. Like everyone dresses like they're at home there. Wily.
It is one of the most casual retail destinations you can go to.
Completely. And so I like seeing where what people think is appropriate to, you know, bring into the aisles.
In Los Angeles, you know, when the guys and I lived in New York, I loved getting, feeling like a part of the community in New York, because you could just walk around and just leaving your apartment. You felt like you were part of something. And obviously everyone knows in Los Angeles, things are a little bit more isolated. And so I find that I get that sense of community from the grocery store in particular.
Right.
And so I really try to relish my time there. And when I go, and it's like, it really is absolutely one of my favorite places. And I probably go like 5 times a week to the grocery store.
I love it. And I love at the end when you get to watch all of what, all the precious things you got
yeah,
walking down the runway into right. that bag. I honestly fills me with pride. I love it.
I need to know, like, of I mean, because your sister's in Florida, I just immediately think of Publix.
Yes.
Which has such a beloved following.
Very beloved. They are in the sort of same family as, like, not literally, but people hold that into as high regard as, like, Wegmans or Wegmans, H-E-B. Right. Those are sort of the top three regional Wegmans stores that people
love. What is so great about Wegmans? My parents are really into Wegmans. They just opened in Brooklyn. What is so great about Wegmans? I'm curious.
I went to the one in Virginia once a few years ago for this show on like Alexander Graham Bell Road. And I have to tell you, it's so stunning. It's so beautiful. It's so nicely kept up. They have like toy train. It's one of those that has like gimmicks. You know what I mean?
Oh, wow.
But that there and HEB and I think Publix have the absolute, like the employees stay for like 20 years. Like they offer full benefits, retirement. Wow. Like all
like Costco.
So that is another reason why people love it. So, and they're one of the few stores that like when they give back, like during the pandemic, Wegmans and HEB like really gave back in big ways. So people like, they feel good shopping there is another thing.
Yeah. They gave back more than just like t-shirts with their logo on it. They actually like contributed to.
Exactly. Like they had food pantries going and stuff like that. Yeah.
I always loved, I mean, for me, I love a grocery store. I could spend so much time in a grocery store. But for me, there is nothing better, no matter how old I get, really. And there's a scene in the Jeff Brooks movie Mother where they do this as well. When you go back to your parents' house, wherever you're from, wherever your parents are living, and they need to go to the grocery store because you're there and you go with them. And there's just such, there is not a more freeing. It is like I won the lottery because I can walk through that fucking grocery store and be like, yes, I want the family size Cheez-Its. I'm going to be here for 3 days and I need that family size Cheez-Its.
And they're paying, right? And that's the fun part.
And they're paying.
Yeah, exactly. They're paying.
Which
it is, I have to say, it is, I love that experience too. It is always a little embarrassing at the end when they pay because it's just like adult son not contributing 1 cent to this grocery bill. Like they don't know if like she's putting food in my fridge or, you know what I mean? Like it's so embarrassing, but I do love it.
It's so much fun.
Let me ask you, Brian, what is like, has there been a recent type of food that you've been like diving back into? And I will tell you before you go what it is for me. I've been diving back into fruit snacks recently.
Like a Welch's.
And like a Welch's, a Trader Joe's has like some fruit jellies. I bought Gushers 3 months Gushers. Ago, and that was really like a really fun novelty. Is it like when you go to the grocery store, do you like treat yourself every time with just one thing new?
Yeah, lately it's been, and it has been, I didn't even think I liked these when I was young, but I've gotten into Cool Ranch a little bit.
Oh, of course. Oh.
And that was not anything that, I think we were always like an OG Doritos household.
Sure.
The nacho cheese. But but I'm sort of, I every now and then we'll dip into a Cool Ranch. And I don't know. I mean, aren't we all just seeking safety right now? I feel like right. I am more nostalgic about it. Listen, I'll fuck with the snack wells. They're just harder to find. I mean, because my
that
youth
exists?
Was just dying food. I don't know. I can't remember. Do you think? I wonder if it does. I wonder if it does.
You've got like Olestra chips, snack wells.
I'm on the toilet all day long.
Wait, how do you feel about holiday snacks? Because I, even just right here, I have my Milano holiday peppermint ones.
Pepperidge
I have
Farm.
my little chocolate peppermint bark
love
chocolate
that.
Situation.
We were a Pepperidge Farm household.
Yeah, I do love a Mint Milano. We love a Mint Milano.
I love a Trader Ho-Ho. Is that what they call them, right? The candy cane Oreos?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Love those.
Yeah, the Trader Joe's Oreos with like a peppermint candy cane flavoring.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Except they call it a Ho-Ho. Yeah.
Yeah, which is a little bizarre. Also, I'm waiting for Trader Joe's to drop the gimmick where if they make like a Mexican dish, they call it Trader Jose's. And you're like, guys,
I can't actually believe that's still happening there.
I know.
Yeah.
Trader Joe's is, I guess, the least offensive of all of them, but
yes.
Yeah, I'm like, guys, just cut that out. There's going to be a campaign eventually. Just cut it out right now.
Especially from them. But I don't know. I'm convinced that the water that those employees fill their water bottles with is like filled with lithium or something, because they really are the most chilled, relaxed. Like maybe they're just so relaxed and chilled out there that they're not aware of it.
I sometimes work at this party in LA called Hot Dog, and I met a young homosexual. I was in drag and like through the door thing. And I met a young homosexual. He's 24, 25 years old, recently divorced. Like I have never met someone like that young homosexual divorced before.
From a man?
From a man.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, but he, I was like, oh, well, okay, well, what are you doing? He's like, I work at Trader Joe's now. He moved from Orange County or something. I moved up here and I now work at Trader Joe's and I love it. And he was like raving about,
they love it.
About Trader Joe's. And I was like,
that's the only place I've ever gotten a crush. Like on a, like a, like employee. I've crushed on a couple of those guys before. Yeah.
Well, I crushed on them.
They make it feel so personal. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But then I made a joke to him telling him that this is like Trader Joe's is like his Hope Floats moment. You know what I mean? Like he's up here starting his life again with Trader Joe's and he, no idea.
By the way, in his defense, Alan, I also have no idea, but I smiled and laughed and played along.
Sandy B at her middlest.
Oh, definitely. Yes. I mean, with such a good movie.
Who's
with
that? Harry Connick don't remember Jr. it that well. It was Harry Connick Jr., right?
Harry Connick Jr. and, oh God, blonde. She's an older actress. Oh God, she's incredible. What's her name? Oh, I'm gonna find out. Y'all keep talking, but it was an incredible movie.
I think my dear friend and regular listener of this podcast, Betsy White, I believe that
Jenna Rollins.
She had the soundtrack to Hope Float. So I think I know the soundtrack.
Nice.
Oh, the soundtrack is good.
There's a Garth Brooks song. Barbara Streisand and Vince Gill.
But there's a Garth Brooks song.
That's the only song you know is the one that they sing together.
Well, you need to know.
That's music.
Brent has a very distinct library of music that, I mean, to me, it's like, oh, it makes sense why he has one Barbara Streisand song, and it's with Vince Gill.
Because
the rest of his, I mean, I don't want to speak for Brent, but we know the listeners of this podcast know that his iPod Nano, got like Raffi and Mamas and the Papas and
Peter Paul and Mary,
sure.
But also sometimes rap, you know,
something for everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
Right,
exactly.
Now, you also. Oh, go ahead, Elliot.
I wanted to ask you about your show that you're doing here in LA at the Elysian.
Oh, yeah.
Called No Autographs, Please.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about that show.
Yeah, so it was really a show. I really wanted to do this one not for the autograph hounds because they come to all my shows, you know? So this one was really for the people. My friend Arden Marine, who's another comedian, and I, we've been doing a show monthly in New York at Union Hall. It's so fun. It's so silly. We essentially, the sentiment is that we don't really have that much confidence in ourselves. So we're looking to people who have such a great amount of confidence that they lie about themselves, which we want to become, like Hilaria Baldwin, for instance, George Santos, for instance, like occasionally Sharon Stone, occasionally Quentin Tarantino. Like we wish we could be more like these people. So we sing a song about it. We each do some stand up and then we have Meatball is our guest, along with Chris Fleming, Meatball the drag queen, who did the iconic George Santos, Katana Revanche, or whatever.
Meatball. We love Meatball on this podcast.
Love Meatball. And then Chris Fleming's going to do an original song.
Wait. George Santos's drag alter ego was named Katana Revanche?
Was that it? I'm looking at it.
But I love that. I love that your brain went to Revanche.
Revanche.
French pronunciation.
No, I'm definitely wrong.
I know, Katana. But I love it. Revanche is a perfect drag name.
It is.
Katana Revanche.
Katara Revanche.
Oh, okay.
There we go.
Yes.
All right.
I couldn't have been closer.
I love it. And it's like French revenge.
And yet not quite. That sounds amazing and everyone should check it out. I have also developed an obsession generally on the darker end of things with hubris. And I am like, I cannot stop reading about Elizabeth Holmes, Bernie Madoff. These people have this steely resolve to fake it till you make it. And sometimes, obviously, they get in too deep. And I am fascinated with how folks can sustain a life like that, sometimes over decades. It's really incredible.
That is like our entire mantra for the show, fake it till you make it, lie to get by. Like that's and just the playbook of it and how to do it. But I agree with you. I wish two things. Obviously, I'm glad that I don't have that kind of delusion. But second of all, I would like to think what I could invent if I did. You know what I mean? Like I would really like to put myself in those shoes. And also I wonder with these people, do you think they lose a sense of what's real and what isn't? Or do you think the whole time they know what's going on?
I think eventually, but I also think the anxiety eats at them. Like the lie eats at them. You know what I mean?
You're constantly covering.
But it's all, it's subconscious though. Because after a while, I feel like it just becomes second nature that it's like, it starts manifesting in weird parts of your life.
Yeah.
But before we go, I'll just say for 2 seconds, I've been watching a lot of clips of Elizabeth Holmes. And there's this one clip, it's like her speaking for an hour in front of this group of scientists, sort of after Theranos had been exposed, but before it had fully collapsed.
Sure.
And there's the only time I've ever seen her lose her composure. And it's for like a second and a half, but she's pressed on this one question and she kind of hems and haws, and then she's pressed one more time and she just kind of loses it. And she looks over at the other people on the board on stage with her to like pick up the pieces. And it's just so amazing. I just live in this moment because you're like,
because I have to check that out, because I've never seen a dent in that armor before. That must have been really
There. There's like an ABC thing where they show something like that too. But I want to ask you, Brian, because this is I just love this, because I used to do this on planes all the time. Is there like a little lie that you would sometimes do? Like I would always tell people that I was like, I was on The Sopranos on planes and shit. Whenever I got like upgraded to first class, I would just say, yeah, I'm on The Sopranos. I'm the son on The Sopranos.
And they would back in the day when you couldn't prove it.
They couldn't prove it on, because they're not getting on their phone on that back in 2012. Like, you know what I mean?
$25 an hour to get on the internet. Yeah,
get off that plane. So I would just lie. I mean, I would just say,
I used
there's
to
anything
lie.
Like that?
Yeah, I used to say I was a triplet, and it's not true. And I don't remember. I used to, I one time said it. It was like this, I think it was like one of those, I got a speeding ticket and it was like in defensive driving or something. You know what I mean? And you had to take those classes and they said like, what's something interesting about yourself? And I didn't say it to be funny. I said it because I panicked. Like I didn't know. I couldn't think of anything. And so I was like, I'm a triplet. I have two brothers. Such a lie.
Oh my God. I love it.
Brian, this was
thank you so much
fun.
I adore
We can't wait to see you again in 4 years.
Me too. Yeah, we'll do it every 4 years. Every year before an election, we'll meet up. We'll figure it out.
And we'll hash things out. Where can people find you on the internet? Where can they follow you?
Yeah, just at Brian Safi, BryanSafi. It has all the things and you can find more from there.
Oh, awesome. Thanks
so much.
Thank
you, Brian.
And another thing.
So 2023 has clearly been the year of Taylor Swift.
Has it?
Yeah. I mean, she's always been obviously a big artist. I mean, she's been around for a while now, at least a decade, more than a decade, and has clearly, enjoyed a lot of success. But something shifted in 2023, I think, where she went from being like a blockbuster pop star to this like globally dominating phenomenon who just, I mean, every move she makes, it seems to have, there's, I forget which press outlet has hired their own Taylor Swift reporter, but
oh my God.
I think it was like the Washington Post or something, or, but like totally
that's
legit.
That's where my subscription money is going to.
Yeah, the Taylor Swift beat. But I mean, it's huge. I mean, even like it's not, you think about like the Ticketmaster and all the like ticket sales and the sort of the voicing that she's put behind that, you know, in terms of people and customers waiting forever and ever and ever online to get tickets that are already exorbitantly expensive to I think somebody passed away who was a fan. I think, I don't know if they were at the concert, but all these different narratives. And of course now with Travis Kelce, her boyfriend from the Chiefs, I mean, that is its own seismic story. And as somebody who is very much a middle of the road Taylor fan, I like Taylor just fine. Like, I like her music just fine, but I know plenty of people who are obsessed, and like they from the friendship bracelets to the concerts to the to following every move she makes, and the and also queer friends who are who you know have this. There's this huge underlying a narrative about her being a queer woman and like preparing to come out. I think we talked to Jill Gutowitz about that at some point.
Yeah.
She is this globally dominating cultural phenomenon that mm-hmm. I think everything about her really shifted in 2023. And I mean, how much do you understand it? Do you recognize it? And do you think that it, to me, I would just say like, for me, I didn't see it coming. I think by the end of this year, the idea of her being so ubiquitous in so many cultural conversations was not something I saw coming, because I just don't. Her music's excellent, but
okay. All right. Alan, go ahead.
I mean, I wouldn't go as far as excellent. I'm not saying I know that much about music.
That Alan said, is anti-music. He's anti-music. That is true.
I'm anti. Well, I just don't have much of an opinion on music, so I really can't speak to what her music's like. But I will say that I think she's an example of. I think right now culturally we're in a place where our taste in a lot of things is very, very bad. And that we have, there's very little actually good culture happening right now. And that you look at the box office, you look at, you know, the films that are coming out, you look at, with the exception of maybe like Barbie, even there's a basicness to a lot of the mainstream things that are coming out that aren't really, I mean, she is definitely generating a lot of interest, but like you look at a lot of films that are bombing that people thought would go crazy. And there's just sort of like an apathy of just a lack of interesting culture. And, you know, we 10 years ago or whatever, you had like Lady Gaga doing crazy things and you kept wondering, what would she do next? And I never wonder what Taylor's going to do next, because I know it's going to involve pumpkin spice latte. So I don't give a fuck what Taylor's going to do next, because everyone's going to go crazy about a fucking friendship bracelet.
I'm a little surprised Alan is going anti-Taylor.
Anti-Taylor. I just think it's an example of how little good culture we have right now.
So I think I hear what you're saying. I wonder if the phenomenon that you're describing is more of just how everything has become, I think tastes have become more segmented. We're allowed to, especially when it comes to like television, you know, movies to a certain degree, music, I think like it's easier to follow very specific things now. And so the result is the things that do break through are few and far between, and they're huge, and they're very generic, and they're very generic, I think.
Barbie's not generic.
But the point being, I love Taylor Swift. I think she's fantastic, and I think she's sort of like a modern day Dolly Parton, where she's kind of I don't know, you know, I never know exactly what to believe with these narratives when like pop stars push narratives that they are the singer songwriter, but like, you know, she's pushed that pretty consistently from the very beginning. It seems like she genuinely plays a bunch of instruments.
She's talented. She's super talented.
For a pop star that's not super common, I think she's a feminist without being political about it, which I think is the right like note to strike right now. I think she's doing a lot of things right, and I'm excited watching her ascension, because I think she's a positive force in the world, unlike a few other pop stars I can think of right now.
She's definitely a positive force.
Nazi-aligned pop stars I really can think of. Anyway, go ahead.
No, she's definitely a positive force. I think I guess the fact that she is to a degree safe, whether you say basic, whether you say safe, like, with, you know, like the fact that she doesn't like, I don't know what her fashion is. That iconic status to me is like, I think that's where I'm just like, wait, that it exceeded all, she exceeded expectations, and I have no problem with her. I think she's great. I just am like, whoa, this became, she is like the most famous person in the world, I think.
Yeah, she might be. I mean, but Alan, I feel like there's lots of, I mean, you are so plugged into, you know, pop culture, obviously professionally, yeah, but also personally. I feel like there's lots of pop stars you like, maybe not even singers per se, but like that are safe.
I mean, sure, there are singers that are safe, but there's also, like, I'm thinking of someone like Billie Eilish doing the song from Barbie. That is, it's a song that is slow and unique and different from anything you hear on the radio or wherever you're listening, streaming or whatever it is. And it's just different. It's just different in a lot of ways. And the presentation is different. And you didn't expect that from her and the visuals that she's offering you. Whereas with Taylor, the visuals, the music, the album, the concert, they're all just kind of like what I would expect from someone like her. And it lacks an excitement that someone, and I don't even like Billie Eilish that much, but that someone like Billie Eilish gave me with the Barbie soundtrack. Or like what, Rosalia is someone I'm thinking of that is just exciting and like is doing something different that like I look forward to seeing what she does next. Whereas with Taylor, I'm like, it's probably going to be a weird vintage filter on her album cover and it's going to be a huge seller. And I know what's coming.
That's what I mean. I guess when I stack her, when the way she dominated this past year, and I stack that up against people who I think have that sort of global superpower status, like Beyonce, or maybe even like Lizzo or Billie Eilish, you know, or, you know, I'm sort of like, it surprises me that without the sort of Beyonce has like, there's like eccentricity there. There's an unexpectedness, like a fierceness that maybe there's just like a lack of camp to Taylor that I can't believe has created this enormity of success.
Well, Beyonce is the counterpoint to the year of Taylor in that like those were the two major global tours of the year. And one thing I'll say for Beyonce, even though I'm not like an insanely massive Beyonce fan, is that if I had to look at the exciting things that came from Beyonce's Renaissance tour versus Taylor Swift's tour, nothing really struck me as new with Taylor, whereas at least with Beyonce, it felt very new. And even though I did feel like in some situations she was co-opting a queer narrative, but like there was sort of something fresh about it. There was something different about it. And with Taylor, the only thing that was different was that there was this massive stadium and she wore a bunch of sequins. Like that was really it.
So very lucky, like, though. Sorry, Elliot.
No, it's just saying I'm jealous though, because Travis Kelce is astonishing.
You think he's hot?
Oh my god. He's the most Elliot's type of Elliot has such a consistent type. And like, I remember the first time, of course, I had never heard of him until I found out he was dating Taylor Swift. And then I saw him, I was like, oh, Elliot's going to literally like fly to Kansas City to go to one of these games or wherever he is.
He looks like you could draw him like a cartoon. Like, he's a cartoon. He has big features, you know, big guy, big features, big freckles, big teeth. He's beautiful.
He just looks like someone that would leave the bathroom and then describe to you what his shit looks like.
He does.
It's probably true.
Yeah.
What would your aunt say?
Brent, what would your aunt Ramona say about something she heard on today's show?
I decided to cancel my trip to Paris this summer. Instead, I'm going to visit Chino Valley.
My aunt Joanne would say, I'd love to know which grocery stores have kosher sections. What about Aunt Anne?
My Aunt Anne would say, I have something to tell y'all. I am actually a Swiftie. I love a Swiffer. I love to Swiffer my floors. I do. Listening
love
to Swift.
Swiffer, you know? By the way.
How do I listen to the Swift?
Love Swiffer, but I only like the mop. I don't like the mop. Oh. I like the dusting.
I actually don't like a Swiffer so much. I like a Dyson.
Very rude.
It's a little too expensive, I know, but I love my Dyson. Wait, Michael just showed me something, and I don't know what he's showing me, but he really wants it to be on air. What is it?
Is it a Dyson?
No, it says, why she look like the toddler who walked into the BBC Zoom call, and it's Taylor Swift. Anyone watching at home.
I know that video.
But it's her doing that. It's her doing this, which she does look like that.
There we go.
Anyway,
well, everyone, thank you so much for listening. Good night and good luck.